where we've been in this study up to this point. And I think it's really helpful that when we're diving into these little sections of verses to remember kind of the bigger picture. So the whole book of Habakkuk is a conversation. It's a back and forth between Habakkuk and the Lord. And in the beginning, we saw Habakkuk approach God in distress about the unchecked sin of his people. Then we see God respond, and he tells Habakkuk, he knows, he's like, I got this, and I have a plan in place. And his plan is that he is going to raise up Habakkuk's enemies and have them conquer them. And then we see Habakkuk respond, and he's kind of shocked. He's like, what in the world? And he tells God, okay, listen, I know we're bad, but they're really bad. So, I mean, I'm not sure this quite makes sense. And then we see God respond with these five woes, this a grieving over the sin of his people, and also this kind of pushing back on Habakkuk of like, hey, who do you think you are that you know better than me? And all of that brings us into Habakkuk 3, which is Habakkuk's response to those five woes that God laid out. And as Marissa talked about last week, this is a prayer and a song. And so if we think of this like a song, it's kind of interesting and a little disorienting for us to look at just a portion of chapter 3, because it's like listening to just a little section of the song, one verse, and not listening to the chorus or the bridge or the other verses. And what's even more disorienting is that we're going to take a break. And so we are not going to finish this song until the new year. So I want you to take this week's section and imagine it like a verse of a song that we are going to dig into for understanding, but also remember that it is part of a full song with a beautiful fullness that we are just going to have to hold on to until January, which is going to be really pretty to hold on to that. And I'm going to dive into that in a little bit. So let's start by reading the verses. So we're going to read Habakkuk 3, 8 through 11. Was your wrath against the rivers, O Lord? Was your anger against the rivers, or your indignation against the sea? When you rode on your horses, on your chariot of salvation, you stripped the sheath of from your bow, calling for many arrows, Selah. You split the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you and writhed. The raging waters swept on. The deep gave forth its voice. It lifted its hands on high. The sun and moon stood still in their place at the light of your arrows as they sped, at the flash of your glittering spear. Okay, so I want us to look at two things today. We're going to look at the structure of this section and how it impacts our reading of this song. And then I want us to look at the actual content, the words, and what is important about what he is saying. And in looking at the content, we're going to see that this section is focused on a looking back. And so in that, we're going to dive into what is important about looking back and remembering. So just like a modern day song, this song has a distinct movement. Last week, you may or may not have noticed, but the verses we read were all in the third person, pointing to this God with reverence and distance. But then in these verses, he moves into the second person. He's talking to God directly. He will continue into this in the second person all the way until verse 15. So actually, when we come back in January, we're going to still be in that second person. And then for the last week of our study, just to give you a small picture of where we're going to be headed in January, he will finish in the first person talking about his response. This is important because this is the movement of prayer. This is the movement of our lives. We start with a head knowledge of who God is. We are reverent in God as creator of all the earth. But as we get to know him more, it draws us to know him personally, to talk to him familiarly, to ask questions directly like Habakkuk does throughout this book. And finally, that brings us into response. We will respond to this. If you've never thought of prayer in this way, or you struggle to know how you should pray, start with Habakkuk's model. Give praise for who he is. Maybe if you're a journaler, I'm a prayer journaler, and maybe this week, even take the time to start your prayer in the third person. Like, just see what that feels like. God has done this. God is doing this. God will do this. And then move to the second person. Ask him the questions. Flow to the personal, familiar conversation of a friend. And then respond out of that with I statements. Talk in the first person about how these things you know change your perspective. And this goes beyond prayer. This is how we grow in him. This is the walk of sanctification. We start by getting to know him, who he is, and what he has done. We dive into maybe Bible study or church, or if it was when we were younger, in Sunday school. We get that knowledge of him that lays a foundation, and then it is through that that we grow into a relationship with him. This is a movement. We can't just stay there with head knowledge. We should be moving. We can't just come to Bible study and just learn more and more about him and it never affect our lives. It should move us to first begin to know him personally, not for just what he has done in history, but for what he has done for us personally. And then out of that should come a response, our growth in loving others, in forgiving well, in living rightly. It is the direction of faith. So this structure of this song is really important. Beyond the structure is the actual content of these particular verses. And as the study helped us realize this week and kind of drew out, and it's the title this week, these verses are verses of remembrance. But I think it's interesting what Habakkuk chooses to remember and how he talks about it. And I think that tells us at least two things that he is trying to remind himself of. First is that things are not always what they seem at the moment. And second is that it points forward to something more. Spending time in reflecting and remembering is so good for us. This year has been a big year of remembering in our household. It is Jeff and my 20-year anniversary, and it is also my 20-year college reunion. I recently went back to college to celebrate and do those things, and we're remembering, have all these milestones. We've talked all about it, got to see people I haven't seen in years. But for our anniversary, on the morning of our anniversary, which was honestly not a celebratory day, it was very regular, it was in the middle of the week with carpools and everyday things. And don't worry, we got to celebrate later, but just this day was not. But Jeff decided to make it celebratory for the family. He would make waffles, which we normally only do on the weekends. And as he's making the waffles, he just happens to kind of off the cuff mention that the waffle maker was a wedding present. And it was kind of funny. I don't think either of us realized the reaction we would get out of our kids. They were baffled at why in the world would you get a waffle maker for getting married? And then my favorite, like, as one kid is processing this, my favorite explanation, like, he, like, came up with his own reasoning. And he's like, oh, so you got that waffle maker for us when you got married. And I was like, I was thinking in my head, like, no, I'm pretty sure I wasn't thinking of you when I got that waffle maker. But what it led to is I actually went through, kind of crazy, because I am not good at documenting things, but apparently some people helped me when I was younger. I opened up my wedding book and started to scan. I had all the lists of gifts. I don't even know if they do that anymore, but wrote out every gift and who gave it, and then the little check mark if I sent the thank you note, which didn't always happen. So I went through, and what was funny is we found who gave that waffle maker in the book, and it's an old friend. And it was a sweet moment of remembering and also kind of a realization that we had no idea the extent that that waffle maker would be used or that it would become a favorite of our kids. We were not thinking about kids. The story of the waffle maker is more significant in the remembering where it came from. The current purpose of the waffle maker is put into context by knowing the details of its past. Habakkuk is remembering to help put context to the present situation he finds himself in. But I find the way he talks about the past a little alarming. It's about wrath and anger and indignation. And that seems like an odd thing to focus on in remembering God. Like, why not say, God, I know you saved your people, or God, your mighty hand protected us, instead of saying, why are you? Did you have this wrath against the rivers? But I want to, so back up a second. If you did your study, the study helped draw out these references to some of the mighty acts that God did in Israel's history. If you didn't do your study, here is a quick hint to the answers you're going to discuss in small group. So you're welcome. In verses 8 and 9, the references to the rivers and seas are pointing to God's power over the waters, and that in several different places in the Bible. It's talking about the Nile in the plagues, turning the Nile into blood against the Egyptians. It also is talking about the dividing of the Red Sea in Exodus to allow the people to leave, and then it coming down in judgment on the Egyptian soldiers coming after them. And also the dividing of the waters of the Jordan River in Joshua when they're trying to head into the promised land. Our study doesn't mention this one, but it also brought me back and includes the story of Noah and the floods and the judgment there, as well as the protection that God had of Noah and his family. So we know all of these stories as generally good stories. Some may be harder for us to grasp, but the ultimate result we can look back on and see its goodness. But I want us to think about being in those stories as they happened. Can you picture living in Egypt as a slave and the Nile turning to blood? Now, even though that was to be against the Egyptians, it also affected the Israelites and their living situation. They would have been affected by that in a significant way. Or think about the Red Sea coming back on those soldiers. We like to think of the Egyptians as the bad guys, especially in children's ministry. But the death in the Red Sea would have been significant. And that would have been tragic, even if it was the bad guys. Those soldiers were not the ones that were defying God directly. It was his hardened heart that sent those soldiers after the Israelites, and they died in the masses for it. So I think this is why Habakkuk words this prayer the way he does. When in the moment, it would have felt like a wrath against rivers, an indignation against the sea. But Habakkuk now gets to look at these events from a distance and know that there was purpose in it. It looks different now. And so by looking at it in that light, he can also look at his current situation and know that right now it feels like wrath and anger and an indignation, but its purpose is actually something different, and he can trust that. There is goodness in the story God is telling that he won't know in the present, but because of God's history, because of what he does know from the past, he can trust that this will be good later. So remembering the past helps us to see it differently. I shared my testimony a few weeks ago, and there was a lot about my story that didn't make sense for a long time. But by looking back, I can more clearly see that God's plan is better than my own. Remembering also helps to point forward to something better. And Habakkuk helps us to see that in the language he uses in these verses by referencing the chariot of salvation in verse 8 and the warrior imagery in verses 9 through 11. Habakkuk is using prophetic symbols that are considered eschatology, which is just a big word to say the end times, meaning looking forward to the second coming of Jesus. So in addition to these remembrances helping us to see the past differently, it actually helps us to see the whole story differently and points to the future differently. Habakkuk remembers that the waters obey God, the mountains tremble, the sun and the moon stand still. All creation has always bent to God's will and his saving purposes, and there is nothing that has changed about that. And so we can know that if God acted in power then, we can trust that he will do the same now. The way Habakkuk lays out this past, it shows us a God that is a God who saves his people. The Exodus story is one of deliverance that tells us that God is a God who cares for his people and will bring them out of slavery. And even then in the wilderness with complaining, he will still care for them and bring them to the promised land. Habakkuk is praying this, reminding himself that God is saving his people through this and will care for his people and bring them to a better place. And we get to read this and see even more. We look at Exodus and Habakkuk and all the other stories of the Old Testament that show us that our God is bringing us out of slavery, but not a slavery of men, but a greater slavery of sin. And in bringing us out of that place, he gives us a new freedom and cares for us in the wilderness while we navigate life in the in-between with full confidence of the promise of the land we will inherit. And this, ladies, is Advent. This prayer, this song, is a song of Advent, of remembering and waiting and anticipating, which is why this is a perfect place for us to end in the fall to lead us into the season of Advent. Like, let me just say, if you've been in my studies before, you know I love Advent. Like, I just read in this, I was like, oh my gosh, this was made for me. There's other times where I look at it and I'm like, nope, I shouldn't be the one teaching this. But this one, I was like, yes. So Habakkuk is putting us in a posture of Advent. And Habakkuk didn't get to know the fullness of this Advent like we do. In addition to Noah and Exodus and Joshua, we get to know the story of the one these all pointed to Jesus. And so let's enter this season of Advent in remembrance, because in the remembering, it gives us new understanding of the past and points us to what we can know about the future. Today, after small groups, we have several stations set up, and one of those is the Advent table with some of my favorite Advent books and devotionals to help you prepare your heart for Christmas. They are all different, but if you were to read them alongside each other, I think you would see that they all draw us back to the story of Jesus, stories of the Old Testament to help us more clearly see who God is and to notice how they all point us to the story of Jesus and God's ultimate plan. And that is what gives us hope for the second coming of Jesus as we wait. And so I encourage you to keep this first half of the song of Habakkuk in your heart throughout this Christmas season. This song that is half finished and leaving us in suspense. And when we come back, we're going to finish this song after celebrating the birth of Jesus and really dive into what we know about God as our deliverer and the rejoicing that comes with what he did through his son. So let me pray, and then I'm going to tell you a little bit more about the Advent table, and then we can head into our small groups. Lord, thank you for your words in Habakkuk. Thank you for putting us in a posture of Advent, in a season of remembering and waiting and anticipating. Lord, I just thank you for these women, that they are here to remember and wait and anticipate together. Thank you for the community that you've created in this Bible study. I pray that you protect each of us as we go into our Advent season, into Christmas, to really just be focused on you, to allow these words of Habakkuk to resonate with us for the next month, so that we can come back refreshed and renewed and ready to finish out Habakkuk and to see the full completion of your story in this book. In your name I pray. Amen.